Hey, you've got the morning show here on Raglan Community Radio, and I want to welcome our community board chairperson, Dennis Amor, to the studio. Good morning, Dennis.
Morning, Aaron.
So we've just been sitting here talking about communications and community engagement, and some of you might have missed your chance to have a say on the pre-engagement for the long-term plan. I think this long-term plan is quite a big deal because the council's confronting a lot of spending issues. This is the thing that will come into effect next July, but they're talking about it now. I mean, do you see that as well?
Definitely. You know, this is basically setting the long term over the next 9 years, and it's going to look at the spending or expenditure from council over the next 9 years. So, the more people we can get involved in that, having a say in what's their priorities and what aren't, the better. Because otherwise, at the end of the day, it impacts on our rates. And you know, we know from the 1 year plan that was put in, we got significant rate increases there. You know, up to 13%, and depending on the valuation change on your property, it was higher than that for some people. So, it's certainly going to be a big deal, and the more people we can get engaged in it, the better.
I had a question in my head. It was going to go somewhere useful, and it is now gone. It affects your rates. It affects our services as well. Because if you listen to the community as a whole, they want lower rates and more services. So,
exactly, and that's human nature, isn't it? Let's face it, with anything. But at the end of the day, we've got to cut the cloth to suit what people can afford, and that's what it comes back to. Is do you look at what councils used to do 40 or 50 years ago, where we basically provided infrastructure? But now councils have widened that, and they're looking after parks, they're putting in playgrounds, they're spending money supporting clubs and resources, they're spending money supporting the arts. Can we afford to continue to do all those things? And those are the serious questions we've got to ask ourselves. Do we need to support those things in the next 5 years, or do we knock them on the head, get everything else under control, and then revisit those things?
My fear is that the cause of why we're struggling with affording everything is to do with wider economic stuff that's outside the council's control, and we can knock things off every time we do a long-term plan. We can knock a few more things off, and then we're still going to end up not being able to afford the absolute most basic thing, which was probably roads and wastewater, I guess.
They're our
biggest costs at the moment anyway, aren't they?
Yeah, roading is a significant cost for Waikato District Council, and that's just the demographic of the whole thing. We've got a huge area with a low population base if you compare it with Hamilton City Council, for example. So we're at a huge disadvantage. But you're right, there's a global problem, there's a national problem as far as, you know, as far as the economy is concerned at the moment. And New Zealand has its own challenges, and that costs in New Zealand are significantly higher than in other areas, other countries as well. So, but at the end of the day, if we want to, we've got to make some decisions at some point, because rates increases of double figures is not sustainable for some of us going forward.
Yeah, and the decision is pretty much now. Like we've had that pre-engagement close, the council will draft the plan, and then sometime in the new year, is that right, there'll be... people can comment on the plan.
Yeah, further comment. But the pre-engagement, we've asked that we get copies of that, and also ask them if they can give us feedback on what the Raglan area is thinking, rather than just having it as an all-inclusive Waikato District Council thing.
Yeah.
We want it broken up by ward, so we can understand, the community board here can understand what are the things that are critical to the people of Raglan
or
the Whangarei ward.
Our needs are different to, for instance, a rural community over on the other side of the district.
Oh, well, even if you compare us, you know, the needs of the area like Tuakau, Pokeno, compares with the needs of Raglan, Whangarei, are radically different. So we need to be very clear on what we're driving and what we're telling our councillor she needs to be pushing.
Now, there was something that did give me some hope that the staff are listening, is that Alison Diaz, the financial officer, who's the high-level manager that comes out to all our meetings, she said she referred to something about the staff having picked up that the traffic lights on the bridge idea wasn't going to be a goer as far as the community was concerned. So I was pleased to hear, just anecdotally, that the message had got through, I think.
Yeah, well, I think if you went back to the meeting we had at Tomato, I can't remember if you came to the meeting we had at Tomato.
I was there for bits of it.
It came up in that meeting that they were going to spend $200,000.
Oh, I was there because I asked the question.
And we said, where'd this come from? Was, you know, because it was a shock to the community board as well. Mm. And basically everyone on the community board said, what a waste of time. Sure, you get a bit of congestion at times, but I've noticed recently, actually, people are really good because I come over there two or three times, four times a day. Living in Raglan West, and people are really good, but we will get congestion in the summertime. We just got to live with it for a couple of months. But if we got traffic lights there, then yeah, it's how they're triggered and things like that. And really, yeah. Is it worth spending $200,000 on a trial?
When we're talking about cutting back on other stuff.
Yeah. And particularly when for nine months, or probably 10 months of the year, or maybe even 11, we really don't need them.
Yeah. I had read the staff explanation, like the engineer's explanation for why they wanted that, and it was, they said that it would extend the life of the bridge in terms of a one-way bridge, and I guess that's what research shows them. We might say here in Raglan that we're very good at taking turnabout and we don't need the traffic lights, but I thought the engineers are going to be like, no, we've got our research, we know our stuff, and the community might be wrong, but...
Well, I guess what they're
saying... Because that's always, right, that's always the tension, isn't it?
Yeah, but I guess what they're saying is by having lights on the bridge and managing the traffic, they can defer widening the bridge to two lanes for a longer period of time. Well, they could just ignore it and defer it for a long period of time, which historically is what's been happening. So I struggle with the logic of spending $200, so you've got an argument why you're doing it.
Yeah, and it... People, there were comments on that. We were just looking at a Facebook post before. There were comments on that post saying lots of fees have been paid into the fund for a new bridge. This is people's understanding. There's not a specific bridge fund.
No, there's not.
And the council books, but there are fees paid to do that every time a new section is opened up.
There's a roading levy you pay.
There we go.
That's used to be $30,000 or $50,000 or something per section.
Yeah. So that's in there. People are saying, why haven't we got the bridge? And hasn't it been in the long-term plan for a long time? And it has for as long as I can go. If I go back 12 years, I think it was in there and it was going to be built last year, you know, or even earlier, and it just keeps getting put back and put back. But, how much would it cost, Dennis? Do you have a rough idea of how much two-laning that bridge would cost?
Not really, but, you know, I would imagine we're talking 10 million or something like that. What did Rangitahi one cost? There were some numbers splattered about that.
Yeah, I can't remember. I didn't see those. So.
No, nor can I, but it's going to be significant millions.
Yeah. Okay, there was a council staff member there talking about adaptive management. This quote we've got here on my list is very bureaucratic speak, but to do with coastal inundation and flooding. So what are they preparing? Are they planning? What's happening with the
Yeah, interesting, Aaron. I came away with that with the conclusion that we're still where council was several years ago when we lost the Surf Life Saving Club tower, which I was involved in, where it's managed retreat. And when we looked at the little schematic that they had in that paper that James presented, it definitely showed managed retreat. So I'm still struggling that... We've moved any further than that. I certainly came away thinking, well, it's just still managed retreat. They've now called it adaptive resilience or something. But the sketches all showed the same thing, that when it encodes to a certain area and the house falls in the sea, then you move back further. So I certainly
don't... So what's the difference between managed retreat and panicked retreat? You know it's happening, but you still do it at the same time.
Well, yeah, I guess managed retreat, you can sort of plan for it because you know it's going to happen in the next storm or in 2 years' time or something like that. But when we quizzed them on, you know, on Papahua, there was no plan or no thoughts of building retaining walls or doing something to manage, you know, the loss of the sand that we've got both on the northern side and on the sort of eastern side.
Well, let's talk about that because we know we've got to talk about it. On the ocean side, yeah, we know. I mean, even that's complicated because we talk about climate change being a cause of that, but far more immediate is the natural cycle of sand, slugs of sand coming up the coast, and sometimes they deposit, and sometimes they take sand away. So,
correct.
So that's like, but you look at that, what's happening over there on the other side of the airfield, and you think, it's all on now. We're going to lose it, but it's been there in the past and filled back up again. So maybe that'll happen again. On this side, when the walk bridge was changed at Papahua, we know we lost basically a groin. And my question for a long time has been, when are we going to replace the groin to stop it eating away and getting and eventually probably eating into the car park?
So, yeah, well, as you know, we discussed that at the community board meeting, and we've asked James to go away and have a talk to Mel so we can actually move that one forward.
So Mel is another staff member?
She's been involved, and she was involved in the discussions we had on site with some iwi representatives and some people of the Papahua camp board, looking at what we can do there. And I think the councillor and myself probably push that a bit harder now, because we do have, due to the works that have been done at the camping ground with the stormwater piping and everything like that, and the swale that's been put in on beside the soccer field and things like that. We have a significant amount of sand there that we've stockpiled we can just get rid of.
Could be useful.
Or in which case it'll probably go over the hill and someone will use it for something else, or we could actually use it to recover some of the land and build some sort of retaining wall there or something like that. So,
but you said that during the meeting there would be a huge fee for resource consent.
Well, that's
to do that.
Well, that's the question. You know, you've got the assets for a few thousand dollars. You can put that sand back into that location. But when I raised it with the project management, he said, "Well, we'll have to go through a resource consenting process," which I understand is probably the right way. But my question to James is, well, you know, it's time. If we're going to head down these routes, we've got to start to make it easier for people to actually manage this erosion in various ways when practical solutions are available.
Neither you nor James, the council manager, have the power to do that, though, do you? Like, in reality,
well, I've got a big tractor and I've no friend with a truck, so yeah, we could actually just go and do it if we agreed.
Were you part of the crew that built up the soccer fields back in the 80s?
I know nothing about soccer fields.
No,
I know a bit about rugby fields, but not much about soccer fields.
Well, Alan Dando, who's passed on, told me, because he was one of the original parents at the club, that the Hamilton clubs used to complain that when they came out to Raglan to play at high tide, the
Papahua
would be boggy. And so they went and got a digger and a truck on a Saturday or a Sunday and went and dug up the sandbank and spread it out 20 centimetres across. And that did raise it up. And we've got little holes in the ground where you put the flags in, and even in summer there would be water in the bottom of them. So that was effective.
Yeah, it's a practical solution.
Yeah, that's what you could get away with in the 80s. It is different now.
It is different, but, you know, I think we've got to be practical about some of these things, and spending a whole lot of money getting consent to do a job that's going to cost $10,000 is, let's face it, ridiculous. And people like Pamela Story and things like that have got to start to look at these things and wake up.
All right, shall we ask Pamela these questions then? But is it within her power as well? Because isn't that a resource? I mean, it's the Resource Management Act. It's a government act.
I don't know, Aaron, but it falls within them because it's below the minimum high water springs level, so it falls within regional council.
It's ultimately their decision, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm sure if they could say, yes, you need a resource consent and here it is, it could happen fairly quickly with a whole lot of engineering have to be done and a whole lot of money having to be spent to justify it.
I know. I know that if you asked their comms department, they say, no, we can't change the way we do things. But I think if we look at something like tiny homes, like all the tiny homes that are proliferating and have become the solution to our housing crisis, most councils could clamp down on them. They could find a rule to clamp down on them, but they're choosing... I think, anyway, this is my perspective, they're choosing to kind of let it happen because they know there's a crisis.
I think that, and that's the case. You know, there's places where I've seen three of them and adjoining a river, and I'm saying, well, what's happening to the sewage overflow? You know, they've all either got a septic tank or a long drop, but at the end of the day, it's permeating through the soil into the river.
Or if those people didn't have a tiny home, they'd be living on the street. Perhaps, and then you've got sewage overflow anyway, haven't you, in a different variety, right?
Who knows? Mum and Dad may have to stand up in those cases and take them back into their house.
Well, maybe, yeah. I mean, what I'm trying to say is that that's an area where councils have chosen, I think they've chosen to be...
lenient.
Yeah, on a grey area.
Yep.
And I hope that the regional council would also take that approach.
Well, they've said it's, what is it, less than 40 square metres or 30 square metres or something, you can build a house and you don't need a build a dwelling and you don't need a permit. So by doing that, then I guess they absolve themselves of responsibility for everything associated with that.
Is this the new rules coming in or the old ones?
Because
the government's bringing in some new ones.
Oh, okay. I thought there was a 30 square metre thing.
It's 30, yeah. I think they're... I'm not going to say what it is. It's something I heard the number 60, and I wasn't sure whether that included services or not. That could be without a resource consent. That's a proposal with the current government.
Oh, well, that's quite a nice small home.
Well, yeah, it's bigger than a tiny home.
Yes.
Anyway, we've got a little bit sidetracked. I've got several lists here.
Yeah, that's scary.
Well, there's so many things. Let's just go with the easy one. No, there's a lot of stuff. Like, we're near a walkway. That's finished. Oh, do we know what's happening with the other end of that walkway?
Yeah, there's some engineering design work going on with the other end. I've not had anything official from council, but talking to the project manager who did the end that's been completed, which we'll call the jetty end, he's indicating to me that it's moving forward, and he's hopeful that April, May next year we'll actually do the other side, which is a lot earlier than I anticipated. So if we can do that, that's fantastic.
Well, there does seem to be some quite big holes in the wall.
There is some big holes in the wall, so it is involving more engineering. It'll still involve resource consent, but he said it's moving forward, so that's good news.
I know the community board didn't talk about CCTV, but it sounds like a meeting's been planned. Is that an indication that something's actually happening now?
Yeah, no, we did talk about it, but it was very quick because we did the works and issues as the last item on the agenda for some reason.
I think you'd disappeared.
I'm not sure if you got bored, Aaron, but sorry about that if you did.
Well, the design. I kind of paid to be there, kind of.
What they're saying is the designs and that's been done, and they're engaged. Design quotes have been received, and they'll engage a successful supplier. I'm just reading from the notes in the agenda. What we've asked for is what are the priorities in the nine towns and how many cameras are we getting in Ragland?
Yeah.
So Alison's gone back and she's going to find that out for us.
Okay.
So it's moving. I was hopeful it was going to be done by Christmas, but I'm probably saying now that I can't see that happening.
Okay.
So.
Well, if they're still having meetings.
Yeah, that's right. So they haven't got to that stage. But we're just trying to find out which cameras we've got and where, because I think we had seven that we prioritised, seven areas, and we put a priority listing on what those were.
Mm. And okay, we'll wait and see.
Yep.
Back to the campgrounds. Have you been over and seen the stormwater project over there? They talk about dewatering something. Is that what are them dewatering and laying of plight? Is that just pipes? Is that getting the water out of the hole because they've actually dug down below sea level?
Yeah, well, you don't have to go very far to get below sea level over there.
As we discussed, yeah.
So what they're doing is they're putting, if you take the western end of the camping ground, they're putting a drain from there right through to the eastern side of the camping ground and then going north, and I'm very approximate on where north, it's really probably northeast, to that corner of the camping ground where the beacon is. Navigation beacon is, and they're putting a pump in there. So they're digging a hole around about 10 metres deep there, and there'll be a pump there, and the water will drain from all of the camping ground into that pipe position and then be pumped down into where the new swale is that runs down just north of the skateboard ramps.
Okay, so we've both been over the site quite a lot in the last few years. Do you think this is the thing that will resolve it? Because I've been told in the past that we're going to resolve it, and it didn't get resolved. How much money's been spent?
About $1.3 million, I think it is.
And Lisa said that came from the campground, not from the council funds.
The Papahua campground profits have basically provided that money. It's money that has been built up over several years.
Yeah.
And that's the money that's gone towards that. So no, it's not being funded by council at all.
Yeah.
It's completely being funded by the campground board, Papahua board. But to, in answer to your question, yes, I believe the engineers are telling me it will, and that sort of thing. So water from the soccer field will also flow that way, back down to where the pump station is and get pumped out to the swale and then out. And they're deepening this they're deepening the swale, but when I say that, we're only talking 50 or 60 millimetres, but making it a wider, softer swale so that it does flow out to sea.
That will make a difference. Like, I remember when we asked for something to be done years ago, and a swale was put in halfway along the sandbank. And you could see, and it did make a difference, because what it does, even 50 mil is enough. It keeps it off the surface further over on the field. So, it's just whether it can get from other parts of the field over to there very easily.
Yeah, and maybe that's something which I hadn't thought about, but you've triggered my thoughts, because we have pulled out from that swale and from the other work a lot of topsoil too. There's probably 50 cubic metres of topsoil sitting over there.
Okay.
Which, in my view, was my thoughts, and we haven't talked about it with the board at the moment. There's an opportunity to fill up all the humps and hollows within the camping ground area and that sort of thing, and smooth things out there. But if there was any left over, it may be that some of that fill can go into the soccer field area and sort of
it would
put
be
a
good
very
idea.
Slight camber back towards where the pump station is.
Yeah, I could do you a contour map of where all the spots are. And since your mates with the fishing boats have started parking on a different part of the area, that area has sunk a little bit. So that's if you're standing looking at Joe's takeaway.
I'm impartial, Aaron. I just support all community organisations.
I know, I just thought I'd throw that in there. So this side of
Joe's, yep.
Yeah, there's a field there for 9th and 10th graders, and that has become wetter, I've noticed, over the last few years. Not that this is my responsibility anymore, but I've noticed.
That may be all the people tramping on it in the summertime and compacting it.
Okay. Anyway, regardless of how it got there, we could throw some dirt in there as well. Yeah.
So that's it. Yeah, I will keep that in mind for when we have a next board meeting on Wednesday.
Okay. We had requests for money from discretionary fund. Some didn't turn up, or some pulled out.
Yeah, one pulled out. That was a Whangarei Dance Festival, I think it was called. They've pulled out. I'm not sure of the reasons there, but we did provide money to the sailing club.
Yeah,
Who want to buy a tractor to get their rescue boat in and out of the water. It's the first time they've come to the board. It's a new thing, so we supported them. We provided $1,000 towards the busking. The lady to Valerie or
yeah.
Veronica?
Valerie. Valerie, it's Valerie. Yeah.
Yeah, who's doing looking at the busking outside the library. I think it's the 10th of November, which looks like a really fantastic project that she's taken on board make happen, and she's doing that through Raglan naturally.
And that's going to involve closing a bit of Bow Street between Wild Cafe and the council.
Yeah, both sides. She said, I didn't realise that initially, but she confirmed that it's both sides of the road, so that people, if they're in the middle, they don't step back and oncoming traffic on the other side of the road.
You usually end up with scores of kids playing around those trees and in the trees. Yep. So yeah.
Yeah. So, but sense. She seems to have a very, very varied program for that. Looks fantastic. So good luck to her. And the other one, we gave $500 to Raw because they've got a bit of a shortfall in their funding at the present time.
There was discussion about making that higher, Dennis?
There was discussion about it, but at the time we had already passed a motion and approved $500, so we stayed with that.
Okay. Actually, that does trigger a question in my head about, because you're talking about should council be getting back to its core business. People treat you like you're a leader for the whole community, for all aspects of the community. Including, so that's all aspects.
The community board, yeah.
Yeah, or and you as a chair and Lisa as a councillor. There's an argument, I think there's an argument for supporting something that brings economic benefit to the town?
I guess, yeah, it's an interesting question because when I did a submission, I think it was on the enhanced LTP, one of the things I said, get rid of the discretionary funding.
You've got an argument with me on that one, but we should talk about it.
We can have a debate on it. But at that time, we were giving money away to a gymnasium. We were giving money away to a whole lot of things. I just couldn't see the logic. And each year, we gave money to the same organisations. We gave money to a bloody Guy Fawkes display at Christmas and New Year's Eve. And these were things that really it was just all going up in smoke, literally.
Literally.
And I just didn't see the logic of having a discretionary fund and just throwing it away when we're putting up rates by 13%. So I was anti it. Since then, we've actually changed, with Ross's input and the rest of the community board's input, changed the way how we see the discretionary fund being spent. So the maximum we can give anyone now, we've said, is $1,000.
Yeah.
And it's got to be for a startup type event. So, you know, if you want to come to us, a bit like the busking at the end of that Valerie's doing, it's a first year, it's something she would like to do annually. She needs to get it off the ground, and I know as well as anyone else, to get that initial seed funding to get something started the very first time is damn difficult. And we see ourselves funding those sorts of things going forward rather than repetitive events year after year where we give $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 to. And we only fund two or three or four or five things.
I think this way
we're looking at probably 14 things we can, 14 seed ideas that we can get off the ground.
Yeah.
And you start to help people get them moving forward.
I think the thing we would agree with on the discretionary fund is that, like, you get a lot of bang for your buck when you fund a community group. Like, if the council...
Depending on what it is, Aaron, and that's my problem. When we put $3,000 in the gymnasium under the town hall, I don't think we've got any bang for our buck, to be quite frank.
Well, no, I mean, I agree with what you say. Like, you've got to have some discretion about how you use the discretionary fund.
Yeah, exactly.
But, like, if for instance, the council was running this radio station, it would probably cost five times as much money as we do it for. I think that would be a fairly fair estimate from my perspective.
Yep.
But the other thing, though, from my perspective, is we are reliant on grant funds. Like, there's no way we get advertising, and our advertising has been going up, even though, you know, financially the community's not doing that great. We've still been over the years increasing our advertising, but there's no way a radio station or we're now a media organisation. There's no way we're fully sustainable just based on advertising on our own two feet.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah. So
and look, there's lots of organisations in Raglan that exist, like that Coast Guard, Surf Life Saving, etc. They're all basically dependent on funders providing them money.
Yeah.
Sure, you know, and if I can use Surf Life Saving because I know how it works here, but we get about 50% of our money grants through Surf Life Saving New Zealand and the government.
Yeah.
The other 50% we actually have to go out to the community organisations like Well Trust, Trust Waikato,
and other Lion
Foundation and things like that to get the money. And it's a lot of work and things like that. What I was anti with the discretionary fund was where someone, and I took it up with the sailing club, I said to them, the money you're looking for that tractor is actually easily got somewhere else. Because you're kicking it off, we agreed to give them $1,000 to get it going so that they could, when they go to other funders, they can say, well, the Raglan Community Board's supporting this. They see it as a good idea. We want some more money from you. But Lion Foundation and Trust, Well Energy Trust, those sorts of things are set up to support those organisations. And what we're trying to do is, what I would like to see is we're spending more time encouraging people to go to those organisations and get funding from them.
Yeah, it's certainly, I mean, one of the things we're doing is we're bringing money into the community. So I try to avoid going to local funding pots if I can. Sometimes I have to.
Yeah.
Depending on, I'm juggling a lot of things. But yeah, if you bring your money into the community, then that's an added bonus.
Yep, definitely.
On top of whatever you're doing. Structure plan. You didn't see me. My eyes popped out of my head when the board started talking about the structure plan because with council staff there talking about a structure plan like it's going to happen for the community or some kind of plan.
Well,
will happen.
Chris and I have been banging on about this for a long time with council
and people before you as well.
Yeah. And we haven't got, but they've done a lot of work on the Narrowahi Hopper Hopper Taupri structure plan.
Yeah.
And put a lot of effort into that, and they've got that and finalised that.
Yeah.
So we're saying, well, you know, come on, all reality, Raglan's growing as fast, if not faster, than those areas, and we need to do something out here, and we need to get some traction on this. So there's obviously going to be a lot happening with the LTP coming up and that sort of thing and being finalised between now and then. But it was good to see that Alison's taken it on board and James went over it as to whether do we really want a structure plan or do we want a town plan or do we want some other sort of plan. So they've agreed that we'll have a meeting with whoever, I've forgotten her name,
A planner.
Yeah, with a planner.
Yeah.
And sit down and look at what we want for Raglan in the next few months.
It was good to see James, the council manager, taking notes about what you guys were saying, because he said, oh, I'm just here saying this is happening, and then the whole board jumped in and said, we've got these issues, we've got these issues. And
yeah, well, it's all about how do we grow the town. You know, where is this industrial park going in future? You know, now Bob just went ahead and developed something, and then he asked for forgiveness afterwards and got away with it. It probably cost him a bit more than he planned by doing it that way. But at least it saved.
I heard that it saved the council some money because he'd already gone and done a whole lot of stuff.
Well, we're talking about Naomi.
Naomi Business Park. Yeah,
but you know, you could then ask, is that in the best place? Well, it is where it is now, and we just get on with it. But
yeah,
you know, we need to be a bit better at planning where we're going to do this. So, where's the future commercial growth going to be in Raglan? Is it going to be in Rangitahi? And I'm sure the developers up there would love that. But should it be in?
Is that what's best for the community?
But is that best for the community? No, it's probably not, because it just causes more congestion on the one bridge and various things like that. So should we be looking at zoning the whole of the block from Wallace Street, John Street, James Street, and Bow Street?
There was a lady sitting behind me in the public
area. She came and went.
I heard her saying no when you started talking about that side by James Street.
Yeah, well, she possibly lives down there, and I can understand the feeling of some of the people that live in those areas. But there's, you know, down to James Street anyway, there's always been a lot of talk for years about developing that, making that a commercial zone right through to James Street.
Yeah.
And it already goes down to, I think, Bizworks, one past my parents' place down to Bizworks,
yes.
I think is the zoning at the moment. So we've only got about another 6 houses on Wallace Street on that side that would be included.
We've got Bankart Street, haven't we, still?
Yeah, Bankart Street has been zoned. So it was taken out to include that one side of Bankart Street and down to 11, 13, 15 Wallace Street, probably 15 years ago now, if not longer.
I think when Clint was councillor, I remember that happened.
Yeah. So... the question now is, should we be taking that out and just saying, right, it's going to go all the way to James Street? And, you know, nothing's probably happened for 10 years, but at least people that own a house in that area and are looking to buy a property in that area then know what the area is zoned and what could possibly happen around them.
Yeah. There was one thing, there were lots of good stuff mentioned that this manager James was taking notes. One thing I thought should have been thrown in the mix was affordable housing, because there was there was a message on Facebook yesterday or the day before from Raglan Rock saying, we're having trouble finding places for our staff to live. Is there anyone out there who can help us out? And someone did, luckily. But that's a kind of, like, I'm not really involved with the Chamber of Commerce, but I know that's an issue for businesses quite a lot these days, just finding somewhere for their staff to live.
Yeah, well, I guess, affordable housing's a problem countrywide, as we all know.
How much
is it a national problem, or is it a district council problem? And this is where, you know, it comes back to how much rates do you want to pay? Do you want to pay for a whole infrastructure within council to look at affordable housing and manage that process? Because someone else who's a ratepayer now is going to have to pay for that. And I think there's things
you can do that won't cost the council anything. It's just allowing
the heat can go on to the developers, so the developers are not driving what they're developing. And council is saying, well, if you want to do a development that's 600 sections, then X percentage should be affordable housing.
So I submitted to the council in the last district plan on that issue, and it just got ignored. Well, I actually said that because I looked at Queenstown, because they're ahead of us in terms of that crisis, and they're starting to do that down there. That's one of their solutions.
Yeah. But our councillors need to push it, because that's where it gets driven by, and they need to stand up and say, hey, this is what we want to see. They are the board. They set
overage. So I've talked with Lisa about this, and my feeling is, she's not going to say this on the air, but I think the other councillors are out of touch on this issue. They don't understand what's happening over here, because they don't have to deal with the tourism, and they've got attitudes that the market will solve it. I'm not quoting Lisa, right? I just want to be clear. I'm inferring from what she said.
I don't think the other councillors are out of touch, particularly Maori or Iwi representatives, because I know Tilly's talked about this, Councillor Turner's talked about this. And things like this. And you just triggered my mind. 12 months, 18 months ago, there was a study looking, and I sat in on a conference, video conferencing, that looked at housing development within Waikato Regional District Council, and what's happened with that, because I was pushing for multi-storey, which, I don't know, for some reason in New Zealand it seems to be a no-no. But in a lot of places, and particularly where I was in Australia for 4 years, I lived in a complex there of, I don't know, probably 100 families.
Yeah.
Four-storey complex, gymnasium, pool, the whole lot. As a community thing, fantastic way of living. You had an incredible amount of free time and things like that. And I didn't see any disadvantage in being in that sort of an environment.
So it was
real cheap for Sydney. I was right in the heart of Sydney.
So that's what I'm talking about. When I say council doing something about affordable housing is allowing for that or for smaller section sizes, like there. So it doesn't cost the council anything. It's just a matter of changing rules. And even John Lawson has suggested, which you wouldn't expect, suggested multi-storey round by the wharf because it's like multi-storey because it's kind of hidden from the rest of the town. So it's not like you'd have a six-storey block popping up out in the middle of the CBD and everyone can see it and hates it.
Or put it in Rangatahi's.
Or you could put it over there, but even then we'd still see it. But his point was round by the wharf, it's kind of hidden from the rest of the town. So only the people at Tiako can see it.
But there's not a lot of flat land, you know. You can't build it on the side of a hill. You could go up onto Lily Street and build it, but then it sticks out like a sore thing.
You can build it on the side of a hill. It just costs a bit more.
Yeah, you can.
But at least this is the discussion we need to have, right?
Yeah, definitely.
That we're having now. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And those are the things that we need. If we get something going on a structure plan, town plan, call it what we want, then we can make sure these things get included in there and say, this is what we want to see.
Yeah. Okay. I think we've gone a little bit past where I was going to time-wise, but that doesn't really matter because I've got a bit of... Oh, civil defence. Are you happy that there's been a civil defence meeting and people are getting jobs? And
no, people haven't got jobs yet, but we were going to have a meeting on Tuesday after Labor weekend. Lisa, if you're listening, I think you said something about Thursday now. You better send a notice out. I think it's going to be on Thursday of next week at the Fire Brigade Hall. We had a good turnout for the meeting we had last week.
I was a bit late, but
that's right.
Got there.
We'll let you off. So the next day, just to drop names into roles, and then start looking at some training and what those people have got to do so that they can respond in a constructive manner, effectively should something happen.
Yeah. Okay. All right, thank you for coming in, Dennis. Is there anything else you want to mention that I don't know about that you've been working on at the moment?
Probably just the Greenslade Road Reserve.
The natural playground.
The natural
concept.
Playground. And, when I got the Works and Issues report and saying that council's now having an internal workshop to support the design with nature play areas, the workshops extended to over the whole of the Waikato district. Sports Waikato are now involved and external consultants are involved.
Wow.
I said to Lisa, well, we had a $200,000 budget. Lisa, is anything going to actually happen on the ground before we spend the $200,000? Not to Lisa, sorry, to Alison. So Alison has gone back and she shook her head and said, hey, what's happening?
I asked her
to go back and convince me that I'm not just going to end up with a design for a playground for my $200,000 and that's it, and we're still going to end up with nothing on the ground.
It'll be a very good design.
It'll be a good design, no doubt, and lots of consultants have been involved and made money out of it. But let's get something on the ground. So that one is.
I would hope that if the council staff decided that they needed a workshop and to involve every sporting organisation in the district, that would come from a different budget.
I would hope so, but I don't believe so.
Okay.
I'm not that confident. The only other thing, Aaron, is... just to get a plug for Surf Life Saving, patrols will start Labor weekend, so they'll be starting tomorrow at 11 a.m. We just encourage everyone to swim between the flags. If you've got any concerns while you're on the beach, talk to a lifeguard and that sort of thing. But they're there to help you, and if you want to drop in for a coffee and say hello to the guys and the girls, you're welcome to drop into the club rooms and say hi.
Okay. All right, Dennis, thanks for coming in.